My name is Michael Burke. I'm a proud Yorta Yorta, Jajarung and Tangarong man. I come from the Yes Yes and the No No speaking people. We are here today to gather our connection at this meeting place to affirm our connection to the Stony Mountains, to the volcanic plains, to the open grassy woodlands, across to the flowing waters of the Colobin River, the Avoca River, the Campaspe River, the Loddon River. Fire, wind, trees and ancestor spirits, we affirm our connections here today. We welcome you here to the home of the Jajarung people. Thank you. Also, what I'm going to do at the moment, I'm going to get everybody to come around some of this smoke and get some smoke around. Just do it in a single file. Just walk around the fire and then go back to your seat. And what this smoke here is going to do, we've got three, four different plants here. So we've got the cherry bellarb. That's a parasite tree. It grows off other trees. It needs another tree to grow. So what we use that there to get rid of any bad spirits, bad omens, and then to put the good energy back in with the wattle and the gum leaf there. So that lets you follow on country. The old people will guide you through country and make sure you all have a safe journey and that no one gets hurt, and you can utilise the safe passages that we got and drink and share the water and the food that we use as well. So I'd like to welcome you here to Jajarung country.
Danda region, which is apparently one of the highest densities in the state, which is just a reflection of our amazing community. You might not know much about Landcare, but they come in all shapes and sizes. Anything that you're interested in, you can probably find a Landcare group that's doing something around it. If you're interested to learn more, we've got booklets over on that table over there that are free, and they've got a little collection of nine stories from nine different Landcare and Friends groups talking about a project they've done. And there's also brochures with contacts for all of the groups in our region, so you can find out who's closest to you and get in touch for a chat or go along to a working day. And yeah, so the camp out in the mount, this is the sixth one, would you believe? This is the sixth one since 2013. Initially, the first few camp outs were all about controlling pine trees, which were a really bad weed up here on Mount Alexander. So we had some amazing working bees where everyone got in and pulled them out. However, they did too good a job in all the spots that are easily accessible for this many people, so that's why we can't do it easily anymore. So now we try and do activities that get people really connected with the mount and tuned in with the values and threats, which is what our speakers will be talking about today. I wasn't actually around for the first couple of campouts, but my understanding is that the pine control working bees, there was one down the road at the silkworm farm, and so that created, by controlling the pines down there, it created space for where the little habitat heroes have now planted 900 plants. So that's the power of people. All right, that's me done. So I'm going to hand over to Jody.
Thank you so much, Ethan. And I'm Jody Newcomb. I'm one of the founding members of the Little Habitat Heroes group. We're thrilled to be able to introduce this project to so many people today. We're also thrilled to have had the Murnong Mamas Catering here, Uncle Alan and Mick Burke from the Jajarung. We have deep respect for you as traditional owners and all the work that you are doing to maintain the culture and the nature of this land. So Little Habitat Heroes started in 2016 when a group of mums with their first babies met at a mother's group and decided to plant trees in this region as a way of giving back, putting down roots and educating our kids about the important connection to the environment that sustains us. A year of fundraising later and the terrific guidance of Connecting Country, we've had one of the most successful tree planting initiatives that our partners have seen, with 95% success rate. So those 900 trees have withstood the drought and are sometimes growing about this high. So I hope you get a chance to come and see that with us later. But not just that, not just the environmental and the tree planting success. We found that by giving to life, life has given back to us tenfold. And this journey has just been very magical in many ways, and this event today, I think, will introduce you to a lot of that magic. So, beginning with the amazing Trace Buller, who is a local artist and storyteller about the environment. She did our campaign image, which is a beautiful card you can pick up at the desk there. And actually next year she'll be publishing a book which features our tree planting. The next story that interweaved with ours that we found out about... the next story interweaved with ours was the silkworm, the Silk Odyssey, which is about the silkworm farm site that Ian and Marilyn wrote, which is a story of the beautiful ruins on the site. So when we approached Connecting Country and said we'd like to plant trees, what do you think we should do? They said, what about this site? And as Asha indicated, because of the work of the camp out in the mound and clearing the pines, there was this opportunity. And when we went to visit the site, we were blown away by its beauty. It has amazing views, it has these beautiful ruins, and it is already a spectacular place. So this book came out shortly after we planted the trees, and reading it just was another reward, really, for engaging with this place. And then another story emerged, which you'll hear today. Eva Popov wrote a song about our project. And Trace Bella was at the Malden Folk Festival and rang me up excitedly saying, I've just heard a song about your project. And it was a separate initiative, Singing for Country, which was a partnership between the Jadjarong and singer-songwriters to connect people to country through music and get them excited about taking action on the environment, which is exactly what happened for us. And every time I go to the site, I bring my portable speaker and I play Eva's song as we look out over the plains, which is the very first lyric of her song. So it's incredibly magical, and you're going to get a chance to experience that today. As Asha said, please join us. We're going to go down to the Koala parking lot and take a tour there. But first, we have a wonderful opportunity to hear about all the environmental, cultural, indigenous values of that site and what we can all do working together to make this place even more special. And I promise you that if you engage on that journey, it will be as rewarding as what we've experienced so far. So please join our mailing list and get involved. I want to thank especially Lauren and Meg, who are my mothers in crime on this project, who've done so much today to help organise it, and to Asha for your amazing support and Connecting Country. And now we introduce Marie Edwards. Is that right? No?
Oh,
Jared. Sorry, I'm out of order here. Jared has also been incredibly helpful along the way and will be involved with us going forward. Jared.
Thanks, Jared. Morning, everybody. I'm one of the many, many, many ex-presidents of Harcourt Valley Landcare Group, and it's been my pleasure today to welcome you all here to Camp Out on the Mount. This Camp Out sort of started with the Landcare Group and the idea of controlling pine trees. It was also a Connecting Country project in the early days. So we're thrilled to be 6 years in and having all these people come along and enjoy themselves and learn about Mount Alexander. I just wanted to talk briefly about Landcare, and I guess looking around, most people are probably already involved in Landcare somehow or some way, but it's whatever you want to make it, and pick up the booklet over here and have a read. But, you know, with us, we decided, we'll do this. We'll pull out pine trees on Mount Alexander, or we'll build a bridge, or we'll fix up some roads, or we'll put barbecues in, or we'll do some signs, or whatever we want to do. We just write a bit of a grant proposal and maybe secure a bit of money and look for some volunteers. And along the way, like Jody was saying, we've had a wonderful time. Our meetings are raucous to the point where, you know, I sometimes wonder about our efficiency. I think there's probably, you know, 40% of our time is spent laughing. So they're great fun, and you make a lot of wonderful people, and I'd encourage everybody here to look for their Landcare group, talk to Asha, she'll put you in touch with them. And it's great fun. It's really wonderful. I'll hand over to you, my next speaker. Thank you.
Thanks, Jared. Good morning, everyone. I'm Marie Edwards, in case you didn't know. Can I thank Mick for his warm welcome to country and acknowledge that Liangunuk is on Jadjarong country and pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. What a great turnout. Last year I was here, it was freezing cold and there was only about half a dozen people, so it's fantastic to see so many here this year. And as Asha mentioned, this is the sixth camp out on the Mount. And before I go into a little spiel, I just wanted to acknowledge Asha and the work that she has done as the facilitator for our land cares across our region, 30 of them, as she mentioned. She's done a power of work to put together the camp out this year, and I think we should give her a big round of applause. So these events obviously don't happen without a lot of support and a lot of coordination, and it's been a great initiative to have not just the Landcare groups. Harcourt Valley obviously has been a big player in all of this. Connecting Country, it's great to have Mari and Trevor here representing Connecting Country, who've been a participant of this from the beginning as well. It's also really great to have our little habitat heroes participating, and I have a bit of a fondness for the little habitat heroes, and I've talked to Jody a lot about how we could expand the little habitat heroes program right across the state into every kindergarten. Imagine that. Imagine every little 3 or 4 year old learning about their environment, about biodiversity, about their culture. What a great outcome that would be for those little ones and for our future. This is such a beautiful place up here on the Mount. We need to make sure that it is protected. We need to make sure that people who come to visit this place respect it and leave it, as mentioned, the way that they found it. It's becoming much more popular. There are more and more people coming to the Mount than ever before. Part of that is because obviously we have the Harcourt Mountain Bike Path attracting tourists to our region. But I want to reinforce how important it is that we as locals make sure that our mount is protected and looked after. And one of the great things about our mount, of course, is the old silkworm farm. And it's great to have Ian and Mazza here to tell you a little bit about that. I went to visit the site a few months ago, and it really is an outstanding piece of our local history that we need to maintain. The question is, do we put signage up around this place to encourage more people, or do we leave it as it is to protect it? Something to think about into the future around, you know, is it okay to attract more people to this area, or is that about making sure that when they do come, that they have the respect of the environment that we know is required? So there's a really fine line there. Anyway, I want to thank all the little kiddies who are here today. Hands up if you're a little habitat hero. Where are you all? Look at you all. It's so good to have you here. I hope you're having great fun. And I'm sure you'll have great fun down at the Koala Park, and then a trip over to the silkworm site. And maybe Ian and Mazza might tell you a little bit more about silkworms. So thank you for having me here today. This program is supported by the state government, and so we are really hopeful that funding will continue so that we can continue and grow what is a great camp out on the Mount. Thanks very much, everyone.
Thanks, Marie. It's really great to have you here today. I'm now going to hand over to the wonderful George Milford, who's going to be facilitating our panel of experts and call up our other experts.
Thanks, Asha. Thanks for organising such a wonderful day. My experience of Mount Alexander is layered, and it sort of shows that the history of the place has got many different aspects. We're going to hear about those aspects in a few moments, or some of those aspects. We're going to hear from Uncle Mick over here, and from Uncle Ian, and Grandma Mazza.
Yeah.
And then from Terry in a little while. I'm a Harcourt kid, and I was a Harcourt kid, and when I was a kid, we used to wander all over the mountain. We never, never realised the Indigenous past. We never saw a scarred tree or a clearing, and it was only till I was in my 50s. I climbed the mount on my 50th birthday, and I thought, why is this clearing like this in the middle of the bush? And of course, it was a burnt clearing that had been cultivated by the Indigenous folk over thousands of years in their fire stick farming. Then I saw all the scar trees. I don't know why it took me 50 years to learn this history. You are very fortunate children to have access to people who can reveal the past of this mountain. When I was about 15 at the Casamain High School, I was brought out here on a bus with all my classmates, and we had to work in the pine plantation around the sericulture ruins. We were never told what they were all about. We were just there to be forced labour, actually, to cut off the side branches so there was no knots in the timber. Ultimately, the timber was harvested, and then the place was cleared, as it had been cleared at the time when Mrs. Blade and Neil came here. But the first thing that happened was that pine regrowth occurred, and there was random pine trees all over the place, young pine trees. So I was here in 2013 for the first Pine Assassins meeting, and we cut down pine trees very enthusiastically, didn't we, Jared?
We certainly did.
I remember people standing on pine trees and rocking them so they'd break off, and women wielding saws in an unwieldy manner. It lives in the memory. And I thought, are we going to succeed here? How can we rehabilitate this 10 acres with all these regrowth pine trees? But when you go and look at the site today, you can't see a seedling pine tree, but you can see wonderful growth that has been generated by the work of Little Habitat Heroes. It is just magnificent what has happened. Someone suggested before that you go and find a tree that is the same height as yourself and be photographed against it. Well, I hope you're 8'6" tall, because a lot of the trees are so big. And the site has been rehabilitated. It's really a marvellous recovery, and the native bush is again taking over, where white fellas have really had a big impact on the environment. Anyway, enough of me. I really want to hear from Uncle Mick over here. Tell us about how the Jar Jar Rung felt about Mount Leanjanook. And what they what you say made of it, please, Mick.
Yeah, so I grew up around this area. So I got a bit of Irish background as well. My family come here 160 years ago, and happened to marry into my tribal family as well. So we had a farm over the back at Mitchell Falls Estate, and then we sort of lost that to fire in 2009, and my nan and them got a bit old and moved into town. So we've been dispersed across country. So, you know, a lot of our families here from Jar Jar Rung wouldn't have seen many around these places. They're only just starting to come back due to the settlement agreement from 2013 that we started fighting for in 96, 97, started pushing to come back. And then it wasn't only till that Trish Lana settlement agreement come that we're starting to bring our mob back to country. So when the first settlers come to town, they moved our mob on and put us on reserve. So the first one was over at Franklin Ford, and was based over there at Franklin Ford, and then slowly moved on from there to Corranderk. But we had the privilege to grow up at Cummeragunja on my grandmother's mission. So it wasn't until 1939, marks 80 years this year, that my Uncle William Cooper and my couple of other uncles there, they chose to walk off that mission due to unfair treatment and fed rations and stuff. They ran a successful farm, and all our produce got taken into Echuca, into the main town, and sent away to the other people. So it's only that we're coming back now, and this place here is very, very special to us, as this is my grandfather's country, from Mount Barker back all the way, Axdale back to Taradale. And we sit on two sides, so the Tungurong clan on the other side of the Campaspe. They used to come over here and have big ceremony. And that's why this place here was cleared for the men to come here. They come from a little boy, then you come up to a man. So when they're 13, they'll come up here and they get their front tooth knocked out. Then they come men in and they'll be warriors. So they won't be growing up with their mother no more. They'll be going out with their father doing walkabout. When I say walkabout, that's school. So when they're going out walkabout, they're going out to bush and they're learning about all the natural resource stuff. So they're learning about, you know, all the plants and the medicines and stuff like that. So my role here now in the modern day is to bring back cultural fire. So a lot of people here fear the fire, yeah? Fire is a very fearful thing. So due to the 1850, when the Black Thursday come through, 90% of Victoria burnt due to the mob being dispersed off country and not using fire stick farming no more. So the way we use fire stick farming is everyday tool. You use it for cooking, you use it for clearing land, you use it for bringing back native veg. But the end of the day is, the way the country is now, it looks healthy, but it's sick. It's very sick. As you see driving up the mountain, you see all them scars up the tree, big black scars up the tree, because them fires are too hot, you know. You need that nice, cool fire. We should be burning around August, you know. Shouldn't be burning now. It's around August time you burn it, and you just like one fire and let that fire do its own work. You don't go putting heaps of fire in. You don't go using chemicals. You just use the natural resource what's in the ground. Because this land being managed, it's one big super organic farm. Been managed for over 60,000 years, you know. Some of the mobs here was the first bakers, you know. Stuff like that. But, you know, I'm waffling on a bit here. but, you know, so a lot of our mob, they're very, very talented people. You don't hear much because you hear the stereotype stuff and, you know, they think the black fella walk around naked, nomadic. It was a bit different because we inland fellas, we're not in the desert. So we had a lot of dress, clothes, a lot of fancy stuff, a lot of jewellery. And, that was due to managing country in this big supermarket here. So that's how we look at this place here. And then now with youth fellas here today, you know, because a lot of our mob have been dispersed and our numbers have declined, you know, we only make up not even 1%. And so we need everybody's help, you know, whether they're white, black, brindle, wherever they come from. If you're living here on country now, we've got to manage country the way it is and read country, you know, because some of this Western science, it doesn't have no mathematics behind the way our mob used to manage country, so they can't get their head around it. So it's all about what's in the soil, it's about the trees, everything is all connected. They all talk to each other. Every single plant, the dirt, everything, it's all it's a living being. And they are part of our family. So we got to look after them the way we look after our family. So we got mobs that, you know, we don't know everything. But that one family group, they might protect the red gum country. Then you got another family group, they might protect the kangaroo, the guri. And then you got another family, you know, everybody got a part to play. And that's why we all got to work together in unity and get this place back into its best health.
Now we're going to hear from Marilyn, who's going to tell us about the abrupt change that came about when a well-connected lady took over a small portion of Mount Alexander.
You want to sit down? No, I'm fine. I'm not really a grandma. Well, I am, but I don't like it. Thanks, George, for that introduction, and thanks to everybody for today. If I don't get the opportunity to thank you personally, it's just absolutely wonderful. We were blown away when we drove in here to see so many people and so many children that are being a part of this mountain. It's absolutely wonderful. And thank you for that, Michael. That was very interesting. You actually taught me a lot in that one little talk there this morning. And I presume a lot of other people would have found the same thing. And unfortunately, at our age group, and I do speak for a lot of seniors, I don't think we really do, or we haven't had, an understanding of our Indigenous life that was here before all of us. And I think so many of them are very ignorant of the fact, and I'd like to see that promoted a lot more. In fact, my mind is going ahead and I am one of the organisers of the Castlemaine Seniors Festival, and I think it'd be really nice to have you and maybe some of your friends involved in that, and it could be a time for their learning. We've got the little Habitat Heroes learning, so you know, why not the other generation that really has not been involved? I'll see you later about that. We're here today to talk about a wonderful lady. Her name is Sarah Florentia Bladen Neal. Truly, she was Sarah Florentia Ralph. She was born that name. She married a gentleman by the name of Colonel John Martin Bladen Neal. He had a hyphenated name. His family took that name upon him. And Sarah used it quite a lot throughout her industry. And her industry started here in Australia. She may have been from England, and her husband from Scotland, but her industry started here in Victoria. And I'm just going to put Ian on now. We have written this book, Sarah Search. We have just got a couple of copies here today. I may as well get a little ad in. But it's mainly about her life, what she was searching for, and our search. Our search went from 1993 up to about 18 months ago when we released this book, trying to find out about this woman and her past. And there were so many doors that were closed, and it was really, really difficult. We had one photo of her, which is featured in the book, only one. And in those times, if we talk about a woman who was ordained in long gowns and throughout her whole working gear, in the 1800s, these people didn't wear jeans or trackies or anything else to do their work. They were dressed in the crinoline petticoats. All the stays, the ladies will know what stays are. In other words, they were corsets. Men will know that name, I'm sure. But this was the way they were dressed to work. And they worked up on this mountain. Can you imagine dressed in that clothing and working up here amongst these gum trees and the other surrounds of Mount Alexander? I'll put Ian on, and he can tell you a little bit of history about why she came to Harcourt and why she built her silkworm farm on Mount Alexander. Ian Braybrook.
Yeah, thanks, Mazen. Thank you. Thank you too, Mick. I really enjoyed what you had to say there. It was a lesson to me. And what a magnificent spot this is here on this mountain. This is just wonderful, isn't it? And we are so lucky to have it. I'd like to pay tribute too to the original people who lived here, and I have a greater understanding these days of what their contribution was to this area. And I deeply regret the way that the white people treated the original people. It was absolutely disgusting when you look back at it. But it was a different time. The people, as I mentioned, they're very important to this story, Sarah Bladen Neal and another person called Jessie Grover, who both these ladies came up here in 1874 and set up this silkworm industry. The plan of Sarah Neal was to establish a silkworm industry in Australia, and she was definitely on the right track. There's no doubt about that, because over in Europe, they'd had plagues of all sorts of horrible things happening to this mulberry trees, and all their silkworms were dying. The silk industry was in a state of collapse in Europe. And she knew this and saw this as an opportunity for Australia to develop its own silk industry and expand it and, create an industry that would still be flourishing today. The problem with Sarah was that was her gender. She was a woman. And the politicians of the time actually treated her with contempt. She didn't get the government support that she deserved and needed to get this industry off the ground. However, she tried very hard. Her origins were from Corowa. She grew her first mulberry trees in Corowa back in 1865. And then she decided she was going to expand this industry right across Australia. So she chose Mount Alexander to set up a silk farm here. And that was 1874. And why she ever chose this part of the world, you'd never know, because this mountain's hardly the place to grow mulberry trees. But she did, with the help of her Jessie Grover, her assistant, and two girls who they engaged to learn about the silk industry. They come up here, and how many of you have seen the site down there of the silkworm? Not a lot. I tell you what, you must come down there after this and have a look at it. It is really a national treasure. It's probably one of the only thing of its type in Australia, possibly in the world. But it was pretty hard going back then to plant trees. For example, for a start, they planted 37,000 mulberry trees down there, 37,000 of them. And that's a lot of work, and that's a lot of trees. Unfortunately, because of the ravages of possums and a lack of rain, which is happening right now, and other natural things, the project failed. So she packed it all up in 1837 and left. walked out on the whole thing. And, of course, the ruins, what's remaining there is part of the cottage and the foundations of another building. The rest have gone. Originally, there was a big building called a magnanary where they raised the silkworms. That was about, in the old terms, about 100 feet by 30 feet, a big building. And there was another room there, another building called the leaf room, where they harvested the idea that to feed the mulberries, you've got to have lots of mulberry. To feed the worms, you have to have a lot of mulberry leaves. And each of those leaves had to be picked by hand and sorted and cleaned and fed to the mulberries, a massive job. And the people there started work at 5 in the morning to first feed the worms, and they'd finish at dark. And that was a 7 days a week job. So really, you should go down and have a look at these ruins. They're very well hidden down there, and probably the reason they have survived today, because people didn't know they were there. Over the years, there've been a number of people camping there. Some of them have taken stones from the building and built fireplaces and this sort of thing, which is not the right thing to do. And we're hopeful that there will be some signs or a sign erected there before too long, which indicates to people the value of the site. So we'd like to see people down there and actually talk to you on site so we can better describe what happened there. So if you could make it after this, we'd love to see you down there. I might hand it back to Mazza. She might have a couple of words to say. No, Mazza's got a cold. Okay, so that's it. We're not going to say any more, George. Thank God.
Marilyn and Ian have done a lot of groundwork on the site, and as Ian says, I commend you to go there later in the proceedings and they'll point out the different features. They're not as clear now because of the Little Habitat Heroes plantings. It was a desert once. When I went there 7 years ago with the first camp out, the only native trees on the plants on the site were some kangaroo apples. And it was a desert all around the building, and stumps and pine trees. It's all changed. Now, Terry Williams is going to bring to us the modern-day educators' thoughts on environmental rehabilitation and the challenges on the site, and how her class in particular is using Mount Alexander as an object lesson.
All right. Welcome. As Mick said, and it was a wonderful introduction to this site. I find this site very spiritual to myself, and as you can tell by the accent, I'm a foreigner, but that's okay. We all can enjoy this place as well. I have had many past lives, I suppose you might call them. One of my original lives, I was a student at Bendigo TAFE, and this is one of the sites the teacher force marched us up the hill, and I did that, and Bonnie, you can remember, I force marched all of my students up this hill as well, or this mount, and it's just stunning. Everywhere you look up here, you see something different, something special. Later on, I worked for the then DSE, Department of Sustainability and Environment, and this was my site for the Ballantini Annapoda, which is the Southern Shepherd's Purse. I worked on it for, I think it was about 5 or 6 years up here, and it's just incredible just to see the difference over that time, what's happened up here, and different effects of climate and warming and all these other things. We had times up here where I had to duck into a tree to get out of the sleet and the hail and the rain and everything else, but it's just amazing. And to hear the different types of history of this place, and I suppose Marie's question of should we really make this a touristy site, and this is only my personal opinion, no. I think we should protect it. Those that come up here on their own bat appreciate it, want to protect it, want to be a part of it. Signage is great in certain points, different places, different messages, things like that is brilliant. With some of the issues that we have up here in the past, from what I understand, and George talked to me a little bit about it the last time we met, was it used to be grazed back in the 80s, only lightly, George was saying, which is good, but it was still grazed. Grazing has effect on things, and that can get very political, so I won't go down that road. But then I believe it was also in the 80s, in the droughts at that time, hay was brought in from New South Wales, and it had St. John's wort in it. And unfortunately, that was the introduction of quite a serious weed around this area. And many of you have it on your property or have seen it on your property. I did a lot of work on an orchid down in the flats, and I've pulled out a lot of St. John's wort over the years trying to protect it a little bit. But that also influenced the mountain. And we've had various burns over the years, and I'm so glad Mick had mentioned about the burns and things up here. I was unfortunately involved in the last major burn that was conducted up here, and we could get very political about this too, but I'll try to not say anything. hurts my soul, that burn. But it did spread a lot further than it was supposed to, and things happened that shouldn't have happened. And what I noticed after that was the increase in weeds, which is a major issue up here. When you burn a site, as Mick was saying, way too hot, too much of it creates major problems. And I've been a real advocate for nice, slow, cool burns for a long time. You can walk around the landscape and see the difference, and it's really remarkable. And just from my own point, the fact that we get to work with such wonderful people with such great knowledge is amazing, and we need to bring that back into the management of the Mount and all the other areas. With the revegetation works and things like that, I think one of the key things that we need to look at is what's already here. How can we enhance it? Do we need to put things in some places, or do we need to just sit back and let it do its thing, let nature take over? In some cases, yes, we do need to assist it a little bit. Open areas, which I'm definitely going to go down and look at the silkworm farm. That would be great. It was interesting, this one spot, I've been all over this mountain and I never made it to there, so I will have a look. But reveg is really, really important. Rehabilitation, it can be as simple as taking out a few weeds and stepping back and watching it, see what comes back on its own. There can also be other points where you do put a few things in and have a look at it. One of the key things is, like I said, have a look at what's already there. Have a look at what's around. Have a look at the history of things. Have a look at some of the writings and the diaries of all the explorers that went through here. Have a conversation with some of the local people, the indigenous people. Ask them. Find out what was here, what did well here, management of what was here. And I think that's probably one of the keys. And I'll also stop blathering on and give it back to George.
Well, now, these good people are sitting up here for a reason, that they will answer questions and talk. Each one talk about the problems and challenges of Mount Alexander. One of the first questions that I think of is the fact that there was a koala park next to the silkworm area, over many years, and it was abandoned because it had been made desolate by the koalas and by the tourist trade. Should we be making land care incursions into that area and perhaps repairing that, or has it repaired over the years? What's your observation, Terry?
Good question. I didn't spend a whole lot of time there. I've driven past it many, many times. I haven't noticed a lot of problems. You'll notice as you're driving around Mount Alex, the side of the mountain that probably needs the most care is the north, more than the east or the west or the south. That side has a lot of weed issues and things like that. But probably just taking out bits and pieces, as you're seeing them and just letting the rest come back, because the mountains come back beautifully.
Thanks for that. Now, another question is, when you think about all the layers of history and the things that people want to do on Mount Alexander, they want to erect television masts and telecommunications towers, have mountain bike parks and picnic areas and rehabilitation areas. Do you see a conflict between all those aspects?
There's one big thing here, like, because through the culture heritage in here, there's a register that ACRIS has, and that's got all the registered sites or cultural sites. And across the whole Australia, there's only 1% of Australia being ever checked. So up here, there's millions of sites, cultural sites, that, you know, you've got to take into account before we start doing all these other works. But the other thing is, too, that the landscape has changed that much in 170 years that you won't get it back to the way it was. So that 60,000 years of managing country, that the landscape, when the followers first come here, they thought they found the Garden of Eden. It was big parklands and just, you know, that didn't naturally happen by just letting it grow and do its own work. That was managed by the mob. And what you see is what was in the place in the landscape was meant to be there, you know. The mob got rid of what they didn't want and had what they want, because we're sitting in a supermarket. This is like a Bunnings, you know. You come in there and you can access whatever you need, you know. And then especially on these mountain areas, you get a lot of medicinal plants that the mob use, you know. So you won't get the land back the way it was, but you got to think about what we're using the land for. You know, are we coming here to harvest different plants for ourselves? Because a lot of our mob, they're getting obese and diabetes and things like that because, you know, we're from this country, so we've got to be eating this country's plants, not all these other foods. So your kangaroo grass, you know, is one deadly food there. You know, it's been eradicated off the lands. It don't need much water to grow, you know, things like that. So we've got to start utilising what the country telling us and bring that back in so we can harvest that stuff again. It's not just there to look pretty. It's actual, you know, a supermarket. We've got to utilise it. And that way, it will slowly come back to, you know, the Garden of Eden again.
Do you want to say anything about the competing interests on Mount Alexander?
No, I can't really see any conflict of interest there between the various parties. I think we can all work together. And I'm sure that can be done. Interesting, Mick said about the landscape. I have an early drawing here. When Major Mitchell first came through here in 1836, this mountain was, as he described it, lightly wooded, probably because of the result of the work of the indigenous people with their controlled burns, but it was lightly wooded. And I also have a drawing here done by an artist way, way back, which shows clearly that the mountain was lightly wooded. So. And if you look around here, you'll see that there are no very, very old trees here. There are no, you can't see any 150-year-old trees where you'd imagine there should be. So I think the Aboriginal people changed this or retained this landscape, whatever way you want to look at it. And but I can't see any conflict of interest between the, well, competing groups, if you like. What do you think, mate?
No, I agree. I think it's... In this day and age, it's time we all got on together, but I would not like to see any further towers built on the mountain. That's one thing. I'm sure a lot of people would agree. Thanks, George.
Kerry wants to say a few words.
I'm trying very hard not to get political. I don't like politics at all. But just my own experience up here with competing things, management and fire being definitely one of those, we have to be careful with that. With the towers, to my eyes, they're an eyesore, really. And having to burn regularly just to protect towers annoys me. But anyway, that's how that is. In my experience, when you get an differing groups up here. I don't have an issue with different groups using the mountain. I think it's lovely. It's wonderful. They can get a great appreciation of what's here as long as they treat it right.
I had with the Ballantini, I had a lot of issues with the mountain bike riders. And if any of you are, I apologize. I'm not trying to be nasty. But there were a few elements in there that were just, and I can't even remember if this is American or not, but they were real yahoos. And just were out to have fun, and we're just drawing everything. So I think if we have different groups up here, there really should be a lot more rules as such and regulations and someone to actually keep an eye on and make sure they are doing the right thing.
I have another question, and I appreciate that I'm putting you on the spot at short notice. Parks Victoria and DSE, whatever their latest name is, all have a number of mountain ranges and mountain peaks as parks. Is what we have here unique to the region, or is it replicated on every other mountain that's in their control?
I think Mount Alex is actually quite unique. I've worked on various mountains around the area, and it's interesting that there a lot of them are used for different, well, uses, I suppose, different groups. Your Arapiles is very much rock climbing and things like that, but once you get past the scary sides, I don't know why you want to jump off of that, but anyway. It's quite interesting that you'll have what's called ecological vegetation classifications, which is just different groups of plants and animals that use different areas. And depending on where you are, it'll be very different. So they do need to be managed differently for what you have. Some things, like we were saying, well, we can get back to fire is very important. Some need fire, some don't. So I think they do need to be looked at individually and managed accordingly.
Yeah, majority of these plants around here, 98% of Australia is used to fire or to smoke. So that's one big thing for me. But I wear two hats as well. So I actually work for Department of Environment, Land, Water and Planning. And so what we're doing from my uncle, we got an uncle that's from Young Bullock Clan over in Bort. And he's passed on now, but he was the first ever governor of South Australia. His name was Uncle Doug Nichols. He come from Jackie Logan and Walpolin's line. But he used to say these two things, like, you know, there's two keys on a piano. There's a white key and a black key, but you need to play both in harmony. You know, that's what we take on. And he goes, you know, we don't want to walk alone, we want to walk with you. So that's the biggest thing that we found with Delp and Jajarung at the moment. We're working in a partnership trying to bring back cultural fire, the right fire. And the only way we can do that is all walk together. So also sit on Alliance National Indigenous Fire Workshop that's been running for the last probably 15 years. And that's right across Australia. So we've got people from Arnhem Land, Cape York, everywhere that sit on this thing. And we're actually running a workshop in the 3rd to the 7th of June up at Barmer, you know, the Barmer Lakes area. So I'd suggest you fellas go on the internet and have a look on that and come have a look at the way the right fire is, because I know that the way Delp is, they're not doing it right. They're slowly learning and slowly, you know, copying our stuff, but it's about our intellectual property right too. So we want to get our young fellas jobs and stuff in this as well and build our economy up. But the main thing is for us to look after country, because we're here to speak for country. And at the moment, you can see at this country here, it's screaming for fire. Not that hot fire, though, you know, because you get scar marks up the tree, that's the wrong fire. You burn a canopy, you get speared and you'll never be allowed to burn ever again. You'll be banished. That's how sacred that canopy is up there. And then you got your mid-story and your grass stories. You look out here now and we get a fire in here, you can wipe out most of these good plants, you know. And then you got all that regrowth of all of the yucky plants, you know. You'll get thousand. Look over the back there, you got all that wattle. See, the water will just come up everywhere, you know. It's just come up too much because the fire is way too hot. Our fire is real slow, mosaic, cool burning. Might have a 10-hectare burn. Probably only 1 hectare will be burnt, but over in a big mosaic area. And then you slowly just keep adding fire and doing it that way there. You can't go burning out big patches, because the way most burning, you burn edges and let it burn in, that's warfare burning. You'd use that burning for hunting animals, kangaroos, things like that. So the main thing you want is open grassy woodlands, because that's what you want to hunt and gather, and that's how you get it. Too thick like this, no good. Animals can't get around enough, you know. It's hard for us to hunt the animal. But, yeah, it needs to be open grassy woodlands, and fire is the main tool for that, but the right fire. And we sing songs now, so we've been punished and not allowed to learn language, but now we're singing them back. And what we're using is fire. So with the fire, we done a couple of burns up at Bort, and what we did, we put the fire through, then we applied for a biodiversity grant. And then we used some of that money to put back murnongs and things like that we can go out and harvest and get them. But the way we did it, the men went out and did the burn with a couple of the elders, and then the week later after the burn, all the women and the children, they all come out and did a two-day camp, and they planted over, I think it was 300, 400 different murnongs, but all the kids did it. So they go out, make a digging stick, return the soil, because as you know, the soils are heavily compacted here due to grazing, whatever, you know, hard-hoofed animals, because Australia, we don't have them hard-hoofed animals. Now all that lovely carpeted soils is compacted. So a lot of them seeds, that, you know, they're hard under the ground. And then, you know, you go further into Bendigo, it's literally tipped upside down. So, you know, we can't use fire to bring them seed back, but we can use fire to reset the country and then apply for them grants to put them seeds and them right foods back into the landscape. But we got to do that all together in unity, you see. So private property, government land, whatever it is, we got to use this fire the right way. And in alliance is the best way to do it.
Well, thank you, Michael. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Ian and Marilyn. I think we're unanimous in our aspiration. Our dreams for this mountain are that it be enhanced and returned to its native state, that it not be exploited for commercial gain, and that the Indigenous people under the Recognition and Settlement Agreement have a very much more prominent say in the administration and management of the reserve. But it's great too to have little children being educated from the very get-go on the values of this mountain. We are so fortunate to have a mountain of this nature, a reserve of this nature, right on our doorsteps in the Castlemaine region. And we want to value it and continue to value it. And Mick, we want to work with you.
Thank you so much, everyone, for your attention. I hope you found that as enriching as I did. I hear the cries of children, so we're going to gather around and do something for the kids now, which is a beautiful sing-along with Eva Popov. While Eva's setting up, I'm going to hand out some sing sheets, and you can start to become familiar with the beautiful song, The Seeds That Grow. Thank you once again to our panelists. Thank you so much to George and Terry and Mick and Marilyn and Ian. We have recorded that conversation so we can share it with others more broadly, if that's okay with you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Now that's deadly, because this year marks the language return of language as well, and due to 80 years of walking off the mission, and it's only just recently we're starting to bring back that language, and a part of bringing that language is for these kids and the future generation. So we've been singing we Murrup Bort and things like that. So we is fire, Murrup is spirit, and Bort is smoke. So when we sing back fire, we sing back the other animals like Nari, the black duck, Guri, kangaroo, things like that. So we got songs there, but if you come to the corporation, ask the corporation, I'm sure we will share with the kids to share. But
But the main thing is, that's what we want, because we sing this Baralga song at the moment, and on the way home, like, we go past that Greens Lake, Lake Cooper, over that way, Narula Murrung country, and what actually happened over there, because we've been singing that Baralga song and with the fire and bringing all the fire back, there was actual 20 Baralgas in the one spot due to us singing the song, see? So it's all about using language and singing up country, because that's what's going to sing the animals back. So, yeah, just bring up Jar Jar Rung, and they got a big language thing, and they're starting to revive all the language. So, yeah, we got a few songs there you'll be able to use, and, yeah, it'd be pretty deadly. Jar Jar Rung, sort of, we set up a business now. So we sit in Forest Street in Bendigo, and then we got another one based out at Powell Street. So eventually we're going to put ourselves back over in St Arnold and Bort and other places. But for now, we're just based in Bendigo. So you go to the corporation, and then we've got a big family group, 16 family representatives of each family clan from across the area. So I sit on the Harmony Nelson family line. That's my great-grandfather. So his area was from Mumungundij over here, Axdale, and he went all the way to Taradale, and then his grandmother, which is Nantigaruk, she come from the Wangara Gundij and the Terrapuluk. So that's all over St Arnold, back up towards Broadway. And the best thing is to sing language back, to bring back all these plants, and that's what the old fellas up there, they want to hear, is language. We're all equal here because we're on country, see? So this country is a part of us now. No matter who you are, what colour you are, and where you're from, we're here to look after country. We got a job to do, and it's look after this country so our future generation, not about our grannies and their grannies, it's the granny and grannies beyond that. Otherwise, the way we're going, because the water's drying up, green algae, all that stuff, water's gold. We got to remember these things, you know? Oh, yeah, talk on the mic here. This is my wife, Kayla. She's also a Jar Jar Rung woman as well. She's from the Ninoli family. So her grandfather was Thomas Ninoli, which was one of the major lads who sort of helped William Barak and people like that from Corranderk to do the petitioning to the government and things like that. And yeah, go on.
Sorry, I just wanted to mention with, so the corporation, I'm pretty sure you can go there and pick up the, I can't remember what it's called, but it's a children's colouring book, and it has language, so each page will have an animal, and it has a little story about the animal, and then it has our traditional language, which is the word for the animal, so it might have the kangaroo, and it'll say gori, and have a little story about that. But that's a good way for kids to learn the language and about the animals and stuff like that.
Thank you so much.
I also forgot, we got the country plan as well. So that we've been building this up with all the family groups, and it's got all our Jar Jar Rung aspirations and things like that. So you go online, you get them online, or you can get a hard copy from the corporation. Yeah.
Thank you, everybody. All right, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think these guys will all be hanging around a little bit longer if you want to have a chat. So that's really great. Thank you so much. Just before I hand over to Eva, who's going to sing us her beautiful song, and hopefully get all of you singing too, I'm just going to do a few thank yous, because I think it'll be nice to just roll on into the next thing after the song and have us all in that space. So I just want to thank all of our wonderful speakers again. It's so great to have you here, and that was just amazing to listen to. And I want to thank George for facilitating so beautifully. The morning tea that we had earlier was provided by Murnong Mamas, who local Aboriginal women who try to include a bit of bush tucker and everything. So I hope you enjoyed it. It was beautiful. The free T-shirts that are being handed out were made by Big Tree T-shirts, who are in Guildford, and they were funded by the Mount Alexander Shire Council. The camp out on the Mount was also made possible from funding from the North Central CMA through the Victorian Landcare Grants. And we also had contributions from Friends of Box Ironbark Forest, Little Habitat Heroes, and of course Harcourt Valley Landcare was very heavily involved. Parks Victoria provided wood for our fires and some water last night, and lots of other things too. And I just want to do a big thank you to everyone who's pitched in this weekend, everyone who's just volunteered their time and been ready to help. And just to all of you, just I want to say a big thank you. Everyone's been really ready to look out for each other, look after each other, provide these chairs at the drop of a hat, which is really great. And yeah, so thank you all. After Eva's song, we're going to have, as you've heard, the Little Habitat Heroes. If you want to go down to the Koala Park car park and look for people to direct you down in the fluoro tops. At the same time here, we'll be having an activity to clean tree violet seed. So the other day, myself and other staff from Connecting Country went to Frances Sincotta's nursery in Newstead, where she helped us to pick the tree violet berries off of her tree, which have seeds inside them. So today we'll be washing the seed. You rub the berries off and make beautiful violet water. And then you can take a couple of seeds home with you to plant your very own tree violet, which is great habitat for birds and other things. So you're welcome to do both and come and go as you need to for both of those activities. So now I'm going to hand over to Eva.
I'm just going to put it in the stand.
Yeah, I'll move these chairs out of your way.
That's all right. I can just stand in front of the chairs. There's no need to move them. It's all right. Yep. I might just raise a bit from here.
Hello everyone, how are you all? My name is Eva, and my great hope today is that you can sing with me. And so before I sing the song, I will teach you the chorus. So you've got the verses, I think a sheet of music, of lyrics in front of you. But if we could just go through the chorus together, I'll go through line by line, and if you can sing back with me, because as much as I'd love to sing with you, I'd much prefer to sing with you. So the chorus goes like this. There's no going back, but there's those that know. Can we do that together? There's no going back, but there's those that know. Next one is a bit more wordy. The seeds we plant now are the seeds that grow. The seeds we plant now are the seeds that grow. From Leanganook to the plains below. From Leanganook to the plains below. The seeds we plant now are the seeds that grow. The seeds we plant now are the seeds that grow. So I'm just going to play the chorus a couple of times. There's no going back, but there's those that know. The seeds we plant now are the seeds that grow. From Leanganook to the plains below. The seeds we plant now are the seeds that grow.
If we can do that one more time, and just feel free to be as loud and as out of tune and
bear with me. I'm just going to sing the second harmony line, if any of you feel like singing it with me. So we'll sing it one more time before we sing the song, and you can sing what we just did together, or you can sing what I'm about to sing, and we'll just see how it goes. Oops, Daisy, you're all right there. Yeah. That helps. plugged in. There's no going back, but there's those that know. And this is just one note. It hangs on it. So, there's no going back, but there's those that know. The seeds we plant now are the seeds that grow from Leanganook to the plains below. The seeds we plant now are the seeds that grow. And so, that's if we feel like being fancy. Otherwise, you can just stick with me and doing the bottom part. I know that this song kind of got taught to some choir, so you might have sung the top part or heard it. So just feel whatever, do whatever feels good. And if that's just humming along or listening, that's fine too. And so here, I'll just play the whole thing.
What did this land look like before? All the roads and all the gold. Who could teach me how to see and know this country? 'Cause there's no going back, but there's those that know. The seeds we plant now are the seeds that grow from Leanganook to the plains below. The seeds we plant now are the seeds that grow. There's a memory in each seed that holds the heart of an ancient tree, grows to shelter all the creatures, connecting country. 'Cause there's no going back, but there's those that know. The seeds we plant now are the seeds that grow. The seeds we plant now are the seeds that grow.
Thank you so much, Eva. As you said, many people here and in Castlemaine have performed that song, the Pigs Choir, the Mama's Choir, and at the Castlemaine State Festival in 2017. So just another example of how this project keeps giving back.